We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Philip has just lost the respect of the Youth League football team he coaches. He was asked what New England should do in the draft, and his answer was objectively terrible. The Athletic just wrote a great article about this, but Philip doesn't have the Athletic or the respect of a boisterous group of 11-year-olds who once looked up to him. Learn from Philip's error, get the Athletic, and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.
Today on In the Trenches, I am joined by a man who had exactly 24 hours to get ready for his first spring ball in Ann Arbor, and that is Michigan's quarterback coach, Matt Weiss. We'll talk to him, as well as a 7 from 77, as well as your traditional bacon fact. In case you're wondering what we're going to cover, that is it today here on In the Trenches.
Let's go In the Trenches with John Jansen. The former Wolverines captain and Michigan Sports Hall of Famer will take you inside the locker room with players and coaches.
You want healthy competition. You want guys. Obviously, they're going to compete, but at the same time, they need to support each other. You know, there's going to be enough people outside that room or outside this building that's trying to tear them down. And it's really important that the people around them are supportive.
Once again, here's John Jansen.
Welcome back, friends. And we're going to get to Matt Weiss in just a few minutes, Michigan's new quarterback coach. He's going to give us a great rundown on what he saw this spring from the quarterbacks, the offense, his experience at Baltimore, as well as Stanford. Great conversation coming up in just a few minutes. But just a reminder, this coming weekend is a big weekend for the gymnastics programs here at the University of Michigan. Men's and women's gymnastics will be traveling to their respective sites for the NCAA championships. And on Conquering Heroes the last 2 weeks, Bev Palacki, women's gymnastics coach, and Kurt Golder, men's gymnastics coach, joined me on both episodes to give us a rundown and expectations for the NCAA championships. So make sure you go back to the feed. That is MGO Blue Podcast with John Jansen. You can find Conquering Heroes and both of those, as well as anything else that you want to know that's going on in Michigan athletics. That's what Conquering Heroes is for. Defend the Block is covering everything Michigan basketball, men's and women's. And this week, Naz Hillman joined our very own Brian Bush to talk about her career here at Michigan, the season that they had, as well as a look ahead because she is a junior. She'll be back for one more exceptional year and a lot to look forward to for the squad that Kim Barnes-Arrico is assembling for next year. But Mr. Bush, welcome in. And what did Naz have to say?
Well, before I get to Naz, if you want to find out what Kurt Golder believes is John Jansen's gymnastic events, not just one, he gave us two. Oh, yeah. Tuesday's episode at the 14:30 mark. You've got to check it out. It's amazing. I don't want to spoil it because he gave like a real life scouting report. This wasn't like I know you were kind of like half interested, half joking. He was like, no, yeah, we'll find a spot for you.
Hey, a little secret. When I was a student athlete here at the University of Michigan, I was a physical education major. And I took a couple of classes on, you know, team sports as well as individual sports, coaching and teaching those, gymnastics and the skills in gymnastics. So the balance beam, not going to lie to you, I'm pretty good. The parallel bars, again, not going to lie to you, pretty darn good. So I'm not going to tell you what it was that Coach Golder said I was going to be good at. So you just go ahead, take a listen. Was it 14:30?
Mm-hmm.
And a little bit of pleasure for your ears as well as your imagination.
I will say, if this ever becomes a video format, we will definitely have to do this because I want to see every John Jansen gymnastics event, the good ones and the not so good. In terms of Nas, what I loved was that she was just finishing workout. She was in the locker room at Chrysler. I mean, she was right back at it. And part of the reason why is because of the news that came out on Wednesday that she's one of 20 collegiate players to head to the USA basketball team trials. Congratulations to her. Didn't talk about that with her because it hadn't come out, but she has already started working for next season. She discussed a lot of the emotions around not just the end of the season, but also that unique trip home for Michigan women's basketball with the emergency landing in Evansville, Indiana, including an interesting conclusion she came to. Love talking to her. She's a great representative. And John, I know that, you know, that Baylor game, there were so many people who don't normally tweet about Michigan women's basketball or talk about it who were. That was so special because there have been a lot of ratings numbers that have been down in sports. I mean, I was locked in on the Masters on Sunday, and it was still not a great rated event. Women's basketball in the NCAA tournament really bumped up, and I think it's a credit to teams like Michigan that kind of messed with the chalk that we normally see in that sport.
Yeah, and there were a lot of people that thought, hey, you know, what was the, and maybe you know this number, but the games leading up to that, Baylor had won by like 35 and 45 points. The point spread was enormous, is what I'm saying. And a lot of, you know, those that follow women's basketball quite closely thought it was going to be the same for Michigan basketball, and it just wasn't. And I think that was, it was an awakening to a lot of people who have watched Kim Barnes-Orrico, the program that she's been building since she's been here. And a lot of people knew about Naz Hillman. A lot of people knew about a lot of the other basketball players, but that was kind of the light bulb moment, if you don't mind me saying that, in regards to just what Michigan basketball is and what the potential is for it next year.
Yeah, and it's cool to see that Toya Wilson, one of the assistants, is now the head coach at SMU. Wes Brooks, an assistant, goes to Mississippi State, which is, I mean, that's a program that's won national championships. I mean, they're up there. I mean, you're graduating people moving forward, and you're churning out new ones, and it'll be fascinating to watch. But, John, I know this is about football, and, man, you were at the Big House on Saturday. So let's start 7 from 77 right there, number one. Just tell me, what did it smell like? What did it taste like? What did it feel like? Did you get a chance to run out of the tunnel with a mask, without a mask, with a helmet? What'd you do?
I wish I could have run out of the tunnel. No, but with protocol in place, I was relegated to the stands. But I did still see the ghosts running around. I got a chance to close my eyes and imagine a fall Saturday afternoon. And I cannot wait for that opportunity. And I still am hoping and praying for a full Big House this coming fall. We have no idea what's going to happen, but that is what I have set in my expectations. And it was great to be there. It was great to see, you know, Michigan, obviously on the field playing against each other. I'm not a huge fan of the color rush uniforms, the all maize, the all blue, but that is something that was special for the spring. The players, I think, had a great time with it, but they're all wearing the winged helmet. So it was fun to watch. And just to have that sense of you're in the Big House. I was sitting there with my daughters, and it was a beautiful Saturday. It was very enjoyable, and you got a chance to see where Michigan is, and you got a chance to see a couple of showcase moments for some young players, as well as some guys that are going to be counted on to have some big moments this year.
So let's get into that. Number two on our 7 from 77. Your observations first for the Michigan offense. What did you see, like, dislike, etc.?
Well, obviously you had Cade McNamara and J.J. McCarthy on opposite teams. And what I saw from Cade was the development and some of what we saw last year, but also some development in regards to directing his offensive line, directing this offense, picking up blitzes, and getting the ball downfield to opportunities. And the one thing that I talked about last year and I've talked about since the spring game is – Cade McNamara does a really good job of giving his receivers a chance to make a play. And he puts loft on the ball when it has to be there. He puts some zip on the ball in some of those crossing routes. I like his accuracy. There's a lot of things that you can like about Cade McNamara and where he's going with his development. In terms of J.J. McCarthy, a lot of what you would expect from a very highly touted recruit. You saw a strong arm. He throws a nice ball. You saw some deep passes that that just were, you know, the ball just came off his hand so effortlessly. One of the things I was surprised at, we had heard about his ability to run, but some of the RPO, some of the options that they were running, I thought he was a little bit faster than I expected. And then you also, you know, there were some things that you would expect to see from a young player where he has to learn where what the protections are, where his throwing lanes are. He had some balls batted down just because, you know, he was looking in the wrong area or he was staring some things down. Things that you want to see happen in spring so he can look at that film, he can learn from it. But the beautiful thing about having early enrollees is that they have those moments now. They can watch it on film. They can work on things this summer. And by the time they get to fall, they're just further along than freshmen normally are. So I was excited about that. Hassan Haskins is going to be a stud. He runs so physical and so hard. I liked seeing Blake Corum out there and the young guys, Tavier Dunlap and Donovan Edwards. I thought both had some moments where you could see the reasons why they're at Michigan right now. And the offensive line starting to come together. And one guy that I did notice, and I haven't had a chance to talk to him yet because as soon as the game was over, obviously the players disperse and, they're not around the building much right now, is Nolan Rumler. I kept looking and the roster that I had some numbers that had been changed and, you know, that happens quite often. So it's not a surprise. And I kept wondering, I'm like, who's this 75? Who is this 75? And I finally got down close to the field. It was Nolan Rumler. And one of the things that I liked about him, I had talked about his recruiting class came in with Trevor Keegan, Carson Barnhart, who I thought had great springs and are going to be major contributors this coming year. Zach Zinter, who we've, you know, talked a lot about, I thought had a great spring. But Nolan was one of those kids where I just kept waiting for that light bulb to go on because he's so strong and moves well, bends well, and just he's starting to play with that natural awareness of what's going on around him. And as a former tackle, he endeared himself to every tackle that has ever played this game of football because when you are, you know, blocking your pass blocking as a tackle, you're on an island. You understand that. And your best friends are your guard and generally your fullback. And since nobody uses a fullback much anymore, you're left with only one friend in the world, and that's the one standing next to you. And when a guard doesn't have somebody who's rushing, he's looking around. Some guys will stand there and technically there's nothing wrong with that because they're doing what they're supposed to do. They're taking up their gap. But what all they're really doing is taking up space. They're breathing air that could be used for somebody that wants to find work. And Nolan Rumler, he went and found some work. He found some ribs. He went out there and helped his offensive tackle and just absolutely demolished. He found work, which is what I loved. And there was other times where he would come in and he would help his center. It was a thing of beauty. I'm excited about it. I'm excited because that tells me that's a conversation that is being had by Sharon Moore. So I saw it from Nolan Rumler, and that's great. I'm excited for him. I'm also excited for this offensive line because that is something I need to see more from every single individual. And if you see it once, that now sets the expectation. I expect to see it more and more from everybody.
I mean, Rumler's a guy on paper when he came here. I mean, dude won 4 state titles. He started almost 60 games in high school. I mean, on paper, that guy has a real chance. That's a good sign for this Michigan offensive line. One that, I mean, let's face it, there's going to be a lot of competition up front. No doubt it will be covered thoroughly here on In the Trenches, shockingly, with John Jansen. Find some ribs?
Find some ribs. We used to call those gate shots. When Marty Schottenheimer was our coach, he had come from Kansas City, and one of the great rib restaurants in the Kansas City area, which is known for its barbecue and its ribs, was Gates. And so when he and his staff went to coach us in the Washington area, they called it the gate shot, and it's just always stayed with me. Hey, I'm going to find myself some gates. I'm going to go get myself some ribs.
I love it. That's great. Number three on our 7 from 77, defensive observations. What'd you see? What'd you like?
I liked the intensity. All of the things that we had heard from Mike McDonald, from all of the defensive players that we had talked to, Brad Hawkins, the intensity was there. Now, you have a new defense. So there were times where, hey, they were trying to get lined up and they're trying to make calls. That is to be expected, but Dax Hill is going to be a stud. We've seen him grow up over the last couple of years. There's a lot of expectations that everybody has for him. But he was used in so many different ways, whether it was on the slot, whether, you know, in the nickel formations or nickel personnel groups, in that safety position, setting the edge and making hits in the run game, coming up and run support. I'm really excited from what I saw from Dax Hill. And I got to believe that Mike McDonald, you inherit certain things when you take over a program, and players that were already there. He has done a great job, I think, of giving Dax Hill the ability to go out there and make plays and use all of the athletic ability that he has. I did see, Regan Upshaw and some of these other guys. I'm sorry, Taylor Upshaw. Regan Upshaw is his dad, who I played with. So I'm having a moment. But it's the defensive line, I thought, played well. I thought their awareness was good. I mentioned some of those passes that were batted down when J.J. McCarthy was throwing the ball. Well, on the defensive side, if you're not going to get to the quarterback, you got to get your hands up, and the awareness and the timing of when to stick your hand up, I thought the defense did a good job at that. So all in all, I'm excited about what I saw. There's still a ton of work to be done. I don't want anybody to misunderstand and say, hey, all problems have been fixed, everything is ready to go. But I was encouraged by what I saw.
Number four, the program kept this scrimmage pretty quiet. Made sense. Obviously, there were no fans because, you know, we're hopefully in the final stretch of the pandemic, but it's still a thing. Vaccines are happening, et cetera, et cetera. But I'm curious why, in your mind, there wasn't a ton of attention about this. Was it because of so much newness around this program, the coaching staff, the schemes, et cetera?
Well, there were a few things. So part of the reason why you mentioned the pandemic is going on, and that's part of why there weren't more people actually in the stadium. And Michigan is utilizing, and the state of Michigan is utilizing, the Big House as a vaccine site. So they didn't want the parking lot to be full of cars. They didn't want there to be a confusion of where to go for those that wanted to get their vaccine or were scheduled to get their vaccine on that Saturday. So that's part of it. And I also know that in terms of the broadcast, it's a question I get asked all the time. How come the Michigan spring game wasn't broadcast? Well, as I understand it, the Big Ten Network had set a certain time that all of the programs needed to say, hey, this is when we're going to have our last practice. And with the uncertainty of the pandemic, with the changing schedules, Michigan just wasn't able to meet that deadline because they had to move some things around. And it just didn't work out. So it's to no fault of Michigan, to no fault of the Big Ten Network. It just was a logistical issue. And so that's why it wasn't on, it wasn't broadcast. But in regards to, you know, whether it's, if you're following the Michigan program and you're listening to In the Trenches, there was still a good buildup. And there was a lot of anticipation about what is going to happen with this Michigan football team. And we're going to continue to bring all of the information that I learned over the spring of the offense, the defense, the special teams, as well as what is going on all summer long, so that the buildup to the regular season. And let's face it, there's not a lot to brag about right now. You know, coming off a 2-4 season, there shouldn't be bragging going on. You've got to show up against Western Michigan. You've got to show up against Washington. You've got to show up against Northern Illinois to prepare for that Big Ten season, so that when it matters most, this team is ready to go.
Number five on our 7 from 77. To your point, I mean, there was some shuffling around, some uniqueness, but it is so valuable that Michigan was able to start and complete a spring practice season. So what's next? How does the team bridge the gap between now and the start of fall camp? What do these next few months look like for players and coaches?
Well, it's got to all be upperclassmen, senior-led workouts. And you're going to hear from Matt Weiss. I asked him the question about where do the quarterbacks go from the end of spring ball to the start of fall camp? How does the progression continue to happen, the learning, the development of the skills? And I'll let him explain in just a few minutes of what he expects from his position and from this offense. But guys like Aiden Hutchinson, Josh Ross on the defense, Brad Hawkins, those are the guys. They've got to rally the troops on the defensive side of things and say, hey, this is how we're working out. This is the level that we expect. This is the attendance we expect. And it's the attention to the detail of getting those guys together, position groups, watching film, going out and working out together, developing those relationships on the offense. At some point, one of these quarterbacks, or all of them, Cade McNamara, J.J. McCarthy, Dan Valeri, they all have to be a leader on this offense, and you've got to get it from your offensive line. Hey, J.J. McCarthy, go out, grab some of your receivers, throw some routes. Maybe some of those receivers can grab some DBs. Hey, we can have a little 7-on-7. It has to be generated from the players. And we talked to Josh Gattis just a week ago. If you missed it, make sure you go back and listen to that one, because he talked about the culture that, yes, there is a need to have leaders on this team so that they understand where they are at the end of spring ball, what they need to do from now until the beginning of fall camp. It's not that the coaches aren't there or can't give them things to think about and work on, but the coaches can't be on the field, in a practice format. So that's going to be up to the seniors and the juniors to get that done.
Number six, the team will stay focused on that, but we can kind of look ahead. We've learned that you have that non-conference schedule memorized, Western Michigan.
Ready to go.
I like it. Western Michigan, Washington, Northern Illinois, three home games. It's a great non-conference setup. You get three at the big house. You get a big-time matchup against Washington. You have two MAC teams that they've won recent conference titles. Those are programs that you can't scoff at by any stretch. So what of those three games at this point of the offseason kind of pique your interest, including the storyline of Giles Jackson going to Washington?
Well, for me, it's, you look at Western Michigan, and obviously that's how you start the season. That's how you start you set the tone for the year. You start to create the identity. What's this offense going to be? What are we going to expect out of this defense? Who are the guys that start to make a name for themselves, and the legends and the ghosts that I talk about running around the floor of the big house, in 20 years, what are we going to be talking about? That all starts with Western Michigan. Plus, it's an opportunity to keep, those guaranteed games, keep those dollars in state. I think it's great to have Western Michigan come to the big house. And for UW, it is going to be Giles Jackson coming back to Ann Arbor. It's going to be, for me personally, a couple of friends that I've had a chance to work with in two different lifetimes. Brock Heward on the broadcast side of things was a quarterback there at Washington, as well as Mark Brunell, who has recently come back to town here and is the quarterback coach of the Detroit Lions. So I played with him with the Washington Redskins. So there's going to be a little bit of a personal investment for me in those games. But that's an opportunity for a Power 5 program coming to town. Again, it's about setting the tone and the expectations and the standards, reaching those standards that Michigan should attain on a week-in, week-out basis in the fall and year-to-year basis as well. And NIU, hey, this is a team that's fast. This is a team that has had success. And I think this is a great three games to get ready to kick off the Big Ten season.
I got a little personal connection with Washington, too. A former roommate of 5 years of mine is the voice of Washington, Tony Castricone.
That's right, Tony Castricone. Tony Castricone was Brian Bush before Brian Bush. He worked on the broadcast with Doug Karsh and myself. And when he decided that he thought he was moving on to greener pastures. We were the lucky ones because we got Brian Bush out of the deal. So Tony Castricone can come to town. And I tell you what, I am going to tease this a little bit. This offseason, we're going to get a chance to hear from some of the play-by-play voices around the Big Ten, as well as some of those that are on our non-conference schedule. And Tony Castricone will be a familiar voice that that Wolverine fans haven't heard from in a while.
No, I mean, he called some Michigan basketball games back in the day with Terry Mills. It was funny. We were talking about when Michigan played Florida State in the Sweet 16. Tony filled in for Matt Shepard with T. Mills when Michigan beat Florida State in overtime. I think it was in Puerto Rico, like 2013. And that was the tape that got Tony the Washington job. It all comes together, and we are going to beat his tail on September 11th.
Yes, yes. Radio crew versus radio crew. I'm ready to go. I'll let you take the first shot, but I'll wipe up after that.
I like our chances with an offensive line base. I'll just be out in the back barking out orders. All right, number seven.
And so will Deardorff. He likes to bark out orders, especially at Brandstatter. Those are the best ones.
Oh, man, I can't wait. We got to get to football season. Let's go. Number seven, John. You've alluded to him several times, Matt Weiss. Obviously, I mean, he's going to have a huge effect on this team. You discussed off the top how unique of a circumstance it was with how late in the game he got here just before spring ball. So just curious, your impressions of someone that I think Michigan fans are very curious about. And, I mean, he's going to have a big say in how this team looks on September the 4th against Western Michigan because we don't know who the quarterback will be.
He is, and I'm not going to spoil any of what is coming, but I will give you a little bit of a tease because when he was at Baltimore, four times in the history of the NFL has an offense rushed for over 3,000 yards, and he was a coach of a Baltimore team that has done that each of the last 2 years, and obviously we all know Lamar Jackson has a unique skill set, which adds to that rushing total from the quarterback position. But he talked about the ability to develop an offense and learn from a coach like Greg Roman, who coached with Jim Harbaugh at Stanford. Matt Weiss was also there, learned from him in there, and also has learned from him at the Baltimore Ravens. He talks about his ability to see things defensively because he was on the defensive side of things. And he also talks about developing the Black Swan. What is that, you ask? Well, stay tuned because Matt Weiss will tell you what he's talking about when he talks about the Black Swan that he learned about with the Baltimore Ravens. But before we get there, we've got a bacon fact.
Boy, I mean, the bacon fact was created to try to make this transition a little bit more interesting, but you whip out something like that. I don't know if we need the bacon fact, but we've got to bring it. And this one comes from a story I read on weather.com. Yeah, like the Weather Channel's website, which is weird. There was a study done at Carnegie Mellon University about 6 years ago. This is real. I'm not April Fool's-ing you here. It claims that
Thanks
eating
for the heads
lettuce.
Up on that, by
well,
the way.
Well, I mean, I had to be careful. Jerk. 77, 97, 107,000, whatever.
Jerk. Number eating of jerks lettuce. on this podcast.
I need Deardorff to shut you up. Eating lettuce could be three times worse for the environment than bacon. Why? Well, lettuce has so few calories that emissions simply from transporting enough lettuce to, you know, really make a dent are much higher per calorie than pork. So, yeah, it's more in terms of the transportation, but if you read really, really off a little bit out of context, all I'm seeing here, John, in bright lights is bacon better than lettuce.
There's no question. And I mean, so lettuce, not only does it this enhances my theory. It's just another component as to why I say lettuce is simply a waste of space. Space that whether you're transporting food across the country, you would rather have pork. You'd rather have your bacon. If you're eating, lettuce is only going to take up space in your tummy when it could be filled by bacon or other forms of pork. So, Mr. Bush, well done. I don't apologize for calling you a jerk because April Fools, you got me hard on that one. So, again, if anybody missed that one, go back. If you don't know the date, that's probably not worth going back to. But what is worth listening to, and I teased it already, find out what Matt Weiss is talking about when he says, hey, we want to develop a Black Swan. as we promised, we're going to continue to make it through all of the new coaches that we have on the coaching staff here in Ann Arbor for Michigan football. And today is the quarterback coach who had to hit the ground in a full dead-on sprint, and that's Matt Weiss. Matt, thanks for joining us. So far, what's your take on Ann Arbor? Have you had a chance at all to get outside Schembechler Hall?
Yeah, thanks for having me on, John. Happy to be in Michigan. Happy to be on In the Trenches. First time caller, long time listener. But yeah, I've escaped the building a few times, not too many times, and I can already feel it's a special place. The campus, the city of Ann Arbor. Can't wait till everything ramps up. We get everybody back on campus, but I can already feel it just walking around. It's a special place to be.
What was the conversation like? What happened right before spring ball? Obviously, Michigan had a coach leave. Coach Harbaugh was looking for, and I'll preface that by Jim Harbaugh because you've now coaching for two different Harbaughs. Jim was looking for a coach. How did your name come up, and how did the conversation with Jim and John as well go?
Yeah, so it was kind of an on and off discussion for a while, and then something happened late there where a spot came open, as you alluded to. Obviously it was hard to leave a great organization, great team, great head coach, a team that, in my heart, I believe has a chance to win a Super Bowl next year. But at the same time, it's the University of Michigan. It's Jim Harbaugh. Michigan wins. Jim wins. Both things are historically proven. I just felt like I had a chance to do something special here. And also, I think anytime like in life, whether it's in your life or in your life professionally, it's always good to get outside your comfort zone, challenge yourself, do something different. I've been in Baltimore a long time, 12 years, if you can believe that. And so, it's kind of just an on and off conversation with Jim. And then John was, he's definitely understanding of it. He wants Michigan to be great too. He kind of didn't want me to go, but at the same time, felt like he could see the opportunity, that could be there for me, and felt like, helping Jim was a good thing too. So it all worked out for everybody involved.
I'd love to hear a little bit of your philosophy because for those that are listening that don't know, you obviously coached at Stanford for a little while, after your high school days. And then you went from Stanford to Baltimore and you've been there ever since. But the last couple of years in Baltimore, and you've worn a lot of hats in regards to you've been a defensive coach, you've been a quarterback assistant, a wide receiver coach, running backs coach. Last couple of years in Baltimore, the offense has rushed for over 3,000 yards, which has only happened four times in NFL history. And the Baltimore Ravens, while you were there, had two of them. Now, I know some of that has to do with Lamar Jackson at quarterback and his unique skill set. But your philosophy on, throwing the ball, running the ball, how do things have to work together for an offense to be successful?
Yeah, so I think, Baltimore is a great example of what you have to do for an offense to be successful. A lot of people said that, people forget this very easily, but a lot of people didn't think that you could run that style of offense in the NFL and be successful. And maybe there's still people who don't, but when we drafted Lamar and then he eventually became a starter, kind of the challenge that John posed to the offensive coaches, and it's a great example of his leadership, is he just said, hey, look, I want you guys to build an offense that you're going to take with you, for the rest of your lives, an offense that, people are going to know as the Baltimore Ravens offense, right? Just like people know the West Coast offense or anything else. And it was kind of built from the ground up under the offensive coordinator there, Greg Roman, who also was with Jim Harbaugh in San Francisco and has experience with quarterback driven runs, and everything just kind of grew from there. And obviously the fact that Lamar is an amazing talent, generational type of player, but everything was built around his skill set. And that's a great example of really how you build an offense. You build it to the players that you have and the things that you can do. We call that the black swan, in terms of, everybody knows the black swan theory. It's something that's out there. that everybody's nobody could imagine happening, you know, kind of like the pandemic, right? Like before it happened, nobody could have imagined that, that all the stuff we've been through last year would happen. You know, you'd think somebody was crazy if they told you what 2020 was going to be like. But then after it happens, you kind of look back and go, oh yeah, I can see how that happened. And that's kind of like the rushing offense that we built, right? I mean, people said nobody could rush for 3,000 yards, like you said. And then you do it, you know, with a quarterback-driven run system, and then people kind of go, oh, yeah, well, of course they did that, you know. They run quarterback-driven runs, and they have Lamar Jackson. So, it was awesome to be a part of.
And just to give some of our listeners context, one of the other times that it happened was, the other two times was 2006. I think it was the Atlanta Falcons. I'm sure you can correct me if I'm wrong. And then before that, you got to go all the way back to 1978 for the New England Patriots. So it's definitely unique in today's football, and it is that black swan that you're talking about. When you were coming to Ann Arbor, obviously it was, you know, moments before spring ball started, and Josh Gattis has his offense. Sharon Moore has his ideas, and we've heard from Josh Gattis about, you know, his collaborative effort and how, you know, he wants to make this offense successful. I'll start off the question by, you know, going this way. How has it been getting to know and building relationships with the coaches? And then with Josh Gattis, how open has he been to the concepts that you're bringing in as well, even though you're the quarterback coach, but, you know, this is a collaborative effort?
Yeah, so it's definitely Josh's offense. You know, I'm here learning this system, which is great for me because, you know, it's totally foreign to me. So I'm learning a lot of new stuff. At the same time, though, I think, you know, Jim is he's a visionary leader, and that's part of the reason he wanted me here is, you know, you want diversity, and, you know, people think of diversity, and you want diversity of background and race and all those things, which is great, and we have here. It's really valuable, but you also want diversity of thought, you know, and that's really important in any successful team, you know. So I'm right now I'm really trying to master this offense, you know, and hopefully I'll contribute ideas where I can, but I'm here to coach in this offense. And Josh has been great. You know, he's a great coach. I've learned things from him that I didn't even know existed, you know, and you see a lot of stuff translate on the field in terms of the way he teaches footwork with receivers, in terms of the RPOs, obviously. I love the fact that, you know, he emphasizes physicality and perimeter blocking. With me, you know, coming from the defensive side of the ball is something I love, something not enough offensive coaches do at times. And then you have Sharon, too, who's a co-offensive coordinator. He's a really talented coach. He's the type of coach, you know, I could see coaching successfully in pro football or college football, you know, because he has a style where he builds relationships with the guys. And the guys really respect him. And, you know, just a talented, really intelligent guy who, you know, it's probably going to be a head coach one day too. So just enjoying the opportunity to learn from those guys.
You know, obviously you came in, you're coaching the quarterbacks. What appealed to you about coming here and having that opportunity to one, shape a very, you know, highly touted young individual like a J.J. McCarthy, as well as to continue to develop the quarterbacks that were already in that room, like a Cade McNamara and a Dan Vellari?
Yes, I've been really impressed with the talent in the room. Like you said, you know, I think that certainly was a draw to come here. You know, Cade is a guy who I think for everything that people are going to say, you know, to criticize him, he's a guy that's going to end up playing 10 years in the NFL, you know, because you can say he's not enough of this or not enough of that, but at the end of the day, he's really smart. He makes great decisions. He processes things very fast. And his accuracy and arm strength are more than enough to win with, you know. So he's a guy that's been awesome to work with. He's extremely valuable to our team. He's our starter. Love the fact that we have him. And then JJ, as you alluded to, a highly talented guy, you know, arm strength, mobility, great athlete, you know, all that stuff is obvious as soon as you step on the field with him. But I've been even more impressed just with his approach to things. His maturity is far beyond his years. You know, early in the spring, I was asking him about his routine, how he gets ready for practice, how he gets ready for games, what he likes to do. You know, with a 18-year-old, you're kind of expecting you know, not much to be there. He went through his whole routine of how he clears his mind and he does his shoulder exercises. And I'm sitting there thinking like, man, can I get a copy of that? You know, so he's impressive in a lot of ways. And I think for him, it's really just a question of when, not if. And then you also have Dan Villari, who's extremely talented too. You know, he has arm strength. He has mobility. I love working with him. He's a guy who for sure could develop into a really good player for us. Then you have the other guys as well. Walk-ons who fill a valuable role for us with Ren Heffley, Peyton Smith, Max Whitner, and we have JD and Andy in the room too, who are really valuable as signalers. So, yeah, it's a great room. That was definitely part of the draw. I think the other part of the draw too is just, you know, the quarterback has the chalk last. You know, and that's one of the unique things about football. There's so many awesome things about football that are different than any other sport. But like if you're playing defense, it really is reactive. You know, you got to be able to adjust any formation. You got to be able to match every route. You got to be able to fit every run. You don't necessarily know what the offense is going to present. You have to react. You know, playing offensive line, as you know, is reactive in that way too. In a lot of ways, you have to be able to block any front, right? You have to be able to pick up any blitz, and you're kind of reacting to whatever look the defense presents. But quarterback gives you that opportunity as a coach where you hold the chalk last. You know, you can, whether it's an adjustment and a drop or a change in a protection or even an audible, you know, or where you want to go with the ball, it's an opportunity to teach those things and have the chalk last. And that's one of the things that's really fun about football is that strategic element of it.
How big of a challenge is it, or what level can a college quarterback get to when you talk about the quarterback's the one that holds the chalk last because they're the ones that sees everything. They're the ones making the calls. They're the ones that's setting everything in motion. But the mental side of things, obviously when it's your profession as an NFL quarterback, you could take it to such an unbelievable level. But what are your expectations mentally for the quarterbacks in your room to be able to get in the right play, pick up blitzes, change protections, do all the things that you see quarterbacks do? What are your expectations for that group?
Yeah, so we certainly don't start with those things, right? We want to be brilliant at the basics. So we spent a ton of time in camp just calling a play in the huddle, right? The cadence, you know, getting taking a snap from under center, which a lot of colleges don't even coach anymore, right? We spent a ton of time doing the basics. But yeah, as much as they can do and be successful, we'll let them do. And I know that Coach Gaddis feels the same way. He has a lot of flexibility in his system for us to be able to do those things. And really, as much as we think that they can handle and be successful, we're not overloading them. We're going to let them do it. They're all smart guys. They're all hardworking guys. They're very conscientious, and that's part of playing the position. So yeah, it's exciting.
You spent, and you've already talked a lot about the defensive side of things because you spent a number of years coaching on that side of the ball from Stanford to really your first, 6 or 7 years, you know, with the Baltimore Ravens. How does that give you an advantage or perspective on the offensive side of things now for the quarterbacks?
Yeah, I think it's a huge advantage. I remember, you know, back in the day at the Ravens, I was on the defensive side of the ball as a young coach, and Jim Caldwell was the quarterback coach. And he was telling me, hey, you know, you should come over to offense. You know, this is what I spend half my time doing with the quarterbacks. I'm just teaching them defense. You know, you could be a really valuable asset on an offensive staff. And for years, I kind of tried to get over there and eventually finally got the opportunity. And it's one thing that, that I love to do with those guys is to teach defense, especially the defense that we're running being so multiple. It's great for our quarterback development. You know, something that's often overlooked is in college football, you don't have the opportunities you have in the NFL with preseason games to see different styles of defense or joint practices to see different styles of defense. You know, you only see whatever your defense does, right? So, that can really limit the quarterback's development if your defense isn't doing a lot. And here now our defense is so multiple that we kind of get to see everything. And I've been having a lot of fun teaching that to them and helping them understand those coverages and concepts. And then where it shows up too is during the season. You know, if you just want to play cover three, and the guys on your scout team don't know what cover three is, that's hard to do, you know, because they don't know how to play it. So I think that's going to make us better too. So really excited about the opportunity to coach quarterbacks in a system where the defense is so multiple too, and it's going to challenge us in so many ways.
We've got Matt Weiss, who stopped by the podcast this week, talking about the quarterbacks here at Michigan, as well as the offense and his time in Baltimore, as well as Stanford. We'll get to that in just a few minutes. But in your time at Baltimore, one of the things that we've heard about John Harbaugh and his system there is the use of analytics. And we're seeing that so much more in the NFL as well as in college. Some of it is as easy as, hey, you know, when do you go for it on fourth down? When do you punt? When do you kick the extra point? Go for two? All of that stuff is part of it. What was it in Baltimore that you specialized in analytics, and how did that benefit, and how do you bring that to the college game?
Yeah, I definitely would say that I specialized in analytics. I specialized in coaching football, but at the same time, you know, I love good ideas. I love a culture of teaching and learning. And John Harbaugh's like that too. I certainly wouldn't say he specializes in analytics either, but that's something for sure that we're looking to bring here and do more of here. And there's a great untapped resource here, which is, the players and the coaches aren't the only talented people here. We have a student body that's really smart and really talented with computer science majors, math majors. A lot of people want to work in sports. And so there's ways that we can tap into that. And it's something that not every college certainly has. The way we're doing that, you know, we have friends in the NFL who can project manage for us because they're friends, but they also want access to the students too, to do their own projects. And then there's already people on campus who are doing a lot of the stuff with, a guy by the name of Professor Finholt, who has a class in sports analytics. And so he's going to help us with assigning some of our projects, you know, so there's ways that we can do that stuff. And like you said, you know, whether it's fourth down decision-making or looking at trends in college football or looking at recruiting analytics of who you should be going after and maybe who you shouldn't, all those things, you know, are possible. So it'll be fun to grow it and see where it goes. And it's exciting.
Yeah, it's going to be fun to learn more about it and listen because that's definitely something that I've not been able to, understand. That's maybe a wrong term, but it just was never used that much when I was playing, and it's very I think it's very new. It feels very new in the NFL, but can be very beneficial. So we're excited to see that develop here at Michigan. And I do want to ask you a little bit more about your quarterbacks. You mentioned the three scholarship quarterbacks and the other guys that are in that room. How do you develop a competition as well as a sense of camaraderie? Because there's only one football, there's only one signal caller. How do you develop that sense of competition as well as camaraderie in that room?
Yeah, I think you hit the nail on the head. I mean, you want healthy competition. You want guys, obviously they're going to compete, but at the same time, they need to support each other. You know, there's going to be enough people outside that room or outside this building that's trying to tear them down. And it's really important that the people around them are supportive. And I know, I'm sure the best offensive line rooms that you've been in, you know, you want the other guy to succeed genuinely. And that goes a long way to how people perform. It's something that we definitely had in the running back room in Baltimore with a bunch of guys sharing the carries you alluded to. Mm-hmm. It's just something that you work hard to build. And, you know, whether it's getting the guys to go out to dinner together every week or, the running backs in Baltimore take a trip every year together, they vacation together, which I think is pretty unique, you know, just encouraging that type of stuff, to make that bond strong. And, when you want, there's enough for everybody, you know, a rising tide raises all ships. It's not a zero sum game. Our cups can overrun it. You know, you look at the history here at Michigan, especially with multiple great quarterbacks being in the room. Obviously, that's well documented. So hopefully we'll get to where they all feel that way and we can have the best of both worlds.
One of those great quarterbacks is now the head coach here at Michigan. And before you came back, he had talked about he was going to be coaching the quarterbacks. You obviously are in that position now. How do you utilize the knowledge that Jim Harbaugh has, the experience that he has, to assist you in developing the quarterback position?
Yeah, he's absolutely an invaluable resource. Couldn't ask for anything better to have in the room, just in terms of, there's very few people that have played at his level. There's very few people that have coached at his level, and there's very few people that have, even fewer people have done both and done it as successfully as he has. And so for me, I think we complement each other really well because, I wasn't the first round draft pick. I didn't play in the NFL for 14 years at quarterback and get my number retired by the Colts. You know, so where I might not be able to speak from a player's perspective, he can easily come in, you know, and speak from his own experience. And in that way, we complement each other really well. He's just a valuable resource. His depth of football knowledge is rare. You know, he's a guy who's done nothing his whole life but play and coach football. You know, so it's pretty special.
And before we let you go, I appreciate your time today. Where do you want to see your group, the quarterbacks, get from and accomplish and develop from the end of spring ball to the start of fall camp? What do they need to continue to work on, and what type of gains are possible in the summer?
Yeah, so I think a huge thing for these guys as we enter this period where we're done with spring ball is they're going to be thrown to their receivers. There's no coaches out there. And that's one thing we try to work hard with, to make sure that they understand the detail we're looking for on the routes and the things that we want to get done. Because we're really relying on them. It's a great opportunity for them to develop leadership. But we're relying on them to coach, as well as play quarterback. And those guys are out there playing 7-on-7 or doing whatever throwing that they're allowed to do. So, no detail is too small. There's a lot of ways they can get better from now to fall camp. Mastery of the offense. They can keep studying film, better understand defense. They can work on their drops, work on their footwork. Throwing to guys and developing that chemistry is absolutely critical. There certainly we can progress a lot even before we get to training camp, as you alluded to.
Well, Matt, I appreciate your time. Look forward to seeing more from your group, hearing more from you as we get closer to the football season. But take care, enjoy Ann Arbor, and best of luck moving that family to Ann Arbor.
Thanks so much. I enjoyed being on, and I look forward to talking to you in the future.
Well, I want to say thanks to Matt Weiss for taking some time. His time is very precious right now. He's trying to move his young family to Ann Arbor, trying to find a place to live, trying to figure out what is going on with this Michigan offense. He had a trial under fire because he did get here literally 24 hours before spring ball started. And from what I saw from the quarterbacks during the spring game and throughout the course of the spring was – I saw good development, and that comes from good coaching. I'm excited to see what he continues to do here at that Michigan position. If you've missed any of the podcasts that you want to go back and listen to, you can find them right where you found this one at MGO Blue Podcast with John Jansen. In the Trenches, obviously talking about all things Michigan football, conquering heroes. Just a quick reminder, Bev Palacki, women's gymnastics coach, Kurt Golder, men's gymnastics coach. They have their NCAA championships this coming weekend. Go back and listen to both of them. They'll give you an idea of what to expect, as well as what gymnastics events I may be good at, as well as Defend the Block, covering all things Michigan basketball, men's and women's. Naz Hillman was the guest this week with our very own Brian Bush. Brian, thank you very much. And for all the listeners, make sure you like, subscribe, and send us some of your feedback so we know throughout the course of this offseason what you want to know about, what you want to hear, and who you want to hear from. And it could be alumni, it could be players that are currently on the roster as well as coaches. And I do promise that at some point we will have Jim Harbaugh stop by the podcast. Looking forward to get a chance to talk to him. And always love talking to you here on In the Trenches.
Thanks for listening to this week's edition of In the Trenches with John Jansen, part of our Michigan Athletics Podcast Network. MGo Blue Podcasts. The preceding is a Learfield IMG College presentation of the Michigan Sports Network.